Welcome to the Ages of Rock podcast with your hosts, Bill Algy, Dennis Talbot, and Alan Tate. We are three guys who have one thing in common, a love of rock and roll. Our goal is to talk about all things rock. We hope you find this show intriguing, funny, and occasionally highly opinionated. Enjoy.
Hey, folks, welcome to another edition of the Ages of Rock podcast. This is episode number 334, and I have my esteemed colleagues, Bill and Dennis, with me. And we have Ron Young, singer for the band Little Caesar, and he is here tonight to talk about his book, Judge This Book by Its Cover. How are you doing, Ron?
I'm doing well, thank you. Yes, my memoir, as it were.
Before we get started, I have a couple of things. Two of my favorite terms that I read were the SS hedonism and narcissistic shitbags.
Thank you. Yes. That's going to be my next band name. It'll probably do as well as Little Caesar. Narcissistic shitbags. Yes. Well, you know, when describing the record industry, one needs to get creative in your verbiage to try to get your point across.
I think that you probably hit that hammer or the hit that nail square on the head. Yeah.
Yes.
Now, my favorite quote was, "I live with a woman who loves me for who I am, despite knowing who I am."
Yes.
And I feel that because I do not know why 29 years later, I'm still married.
There's days I wake up and I think about it and I'm like, she should know better. And yet she's still laying next to me when I wake up in the morning, kind of shocked by that many times.
You know, is she holding a pillow, Ron?
That's what I was going to say. Is there any place you see a pillow? No, I've actually seen that a couple of times.
She's actually sound asleep because she's heavily medicated.
You know, whatever works, man.
Whatever gets you through a marriage.
Whatever works.
Yeah, I've woke up to that a few times. It's like going, "Hi, honey, how you doing?"
Yeah.
It's like, "Why you got a pillow in your hand?"
Taking a big breath.
I'm making the bed. I've been 33 years.
Over soon. You'll be okay. Take the old dirt nap.
It won't hurt a bit.
I'm not in any hurry for that one.
Well, I'm glad that you're finding amusing quotes and interesting descriptions. I try to be, it's like when I write lyrics, I try to be clever on some way, you know, because I think being I love wordsmithing, you know, anybody that like puns and just, you know, and I love like on Facebook playing around, you know, having battle of wits with armed individuals is always fun, you know. And so words are powerful things. And I think with technology, we're learning that more and more because I've sent texts and emails to people and they think I'm yelling at them. And I'm like, no, it's just flat words on a page. And then you read it back if you put yourself in your perception of, okay, if I was angry, would I say, oh yeah, I would say it the same exact way so I could see how people thought what I was saying was meant to be something different. So words are powerful, but they're not necessarily the best communicators. So
absolutely. Yeah,
I think more fights and dropouts and friendships have happened because of texting, to be honest.
Yeah, I agree.
Because when you're talking to somebody, you could say something to somebody and it comes off completely different than if you just send them a text. You know, it's just,
yeah. It's funny because people give me crap all the time for like, dude, don't leave me a voicemail, text me. And I'm like, no, I'd rather you hear me say the words with my personality, my inflection, my delivery, than to text it to you. Because first of all, I'm not that good of a typer. I can talk for hours, but I can't type for shit. Not to mention that autocorrect always puts the words, wrong words in there, and it doesn't make any sense.
So it's not just me.
I never stop to read through it. I hit send, and then I read it, and then it's like, I didn't say you were a ducking asshole. You're a fucking asshole.
I've never used the word ducking ever in my life.
You know how you fix that. You can fix that by making your go to your phone, and you can make every word every time you put ducking, it'll change it automatically. It'll auto correct.
I've said things like, "I wish you, you know, you should take another shot at that." And because I cite the word shit so many times, it says you should take another shit at that. So that's why I'd rather leave voice messages.
Yeah, if you're a friend of mine and you get a text message, 99 out of 100 times it's going to be have some misspelled word or make no sense.
Yeah, you have to be like the Da Vinci Code.
Five texts afterwards to say not ducking fucking. And then I say not ducking, and it'll say clucking. And I'm like, not clucking, fucking, not, you know. It's like, and I'm like, oh my God, I just sent like 8 pre-qualification texts posthumously, you know. Well, there goes that whole line of thought. I thought I was being funny, and my autocorrect ruined it for me.
Yeah. Absolutely. All right. Well, tell us a little bit about the book.
Well, I decided to write, you know, I've done so many interviews and stuff over the years because of my music, and we get into stories and all these things, and I've had so many people, you know, dude, you should write a book. And finally, the gentleman, Steve Olivas, that I wrote the book with, he's a great podcaster too. And we did this interview. We had a lot of fun. And at the end, he said, you know, you should write a book. And I'm like, yeah. He goes, well, you know, I help guys write books. And so we sat down and we just started talking. And basically, he would just ask me questions and I'd tell stories and from the beginning of my life to my end of my life. And he put it into a cohesive linear thing for me, you know, using all my verbiage, and it came out great. And you know, it's really a trip. It's sort of like when you hear the first song on the radio that I ever did, this book shows up from Amazon, and I'm like, oh my God, now I get to be a failed author too.
Hey, so consistency matters.
Up in the world, you know? So I just decided to put this together because everybody keeps telling me, I tell these stories. They're like, wow, man, there's all these crazy and fun things that have happened in your life since you were like young. And you put it all together and it's entertaining and it's interesting. And so I did. And I have to say, though, that there's a bit of panic when you release it because you realize that you've told a lot of stories about a lot of people and you didn't tell them that you were going to be putting all this out into the public eye. And so far, people are calling me with really good responses, you know, a slight correction of, no, it wasn't in February. It was whatever. It doesn't change the story at all. But nobody called me up going, you're such a fucking asshole, dude. You know, it still might happen. Of course, I'm telling Gene Simmons stories and David Geffen stories, and I don't expect they're going to maybe read the book. But if they do, who knows? They might reach out with their attorneys, as they're good at doing. But I don't think so. And so, yeah, just really happy with it. And everybody seems to be really entertained by it. And, you know, I talk about, you know, I try to make a story that to be an example that when you get the opportunity to do something that you love to do and you're hoping that you're going to become very successful at it, which obviously I'm not. You, Bill, don't have a Little Caesar thing and a poster and a platinum record of Little Caesar. You have Kiss, which is a worldwide brand known band. I'm not in a band like that. And though I attempted to be as large as and known as Kiss, I didn't. And when that didn't happen, I started into a really bad path of doing drugs, and then I had to climb out of that. And, you know, I hope that people read it and see something in the book that they relate to, in the sense that I think every single one of us has something they try to do and do well. And become successful at. And for me, it was trying to be a rock star. For some people, it's trying to run a gas station. Some people, it's trying to raise a kid, whatever it is. And there's always bumps in the road. And a lot of times we fail at it, or we don't do, shouldn't say fail, but it doesn't turn out the way you planned. And it kind of throws your world upside down. And for me, I didn't deal with that well. And I think people can relate to how you get shaken in a path sometimes, and you start acting out in some kind of way, whether it's fighting with your wife or drinking too many beers or smoking a lot of heroin like I was doing, you know, and then coming to find out that, oh, this is truly addictive. This is really a rough thing. And then climbing out from that and the things that you learn about yourself that, you know, life is the journey. It's not just the destination. And the things that you do and the experiences that you have, it's not all about whether it be, you hit it out of the park all the time, you know? And so I try to make it relatable in that sense, all the while telling stories about, you know, the famous people that I met while I was trying to get famous and how funny some of that shit was. And, you know, so I think it winds up becoming an interesting read, and I hope people feel that way and enjoy it and pick it up. I don't use a lot of words, but I try to be clever, you know, like big words. I still try to be clever. So, you know, so I think it's an easy and a fun read. So I hope you pick it up. And yeah, it's been a kind of a wacky journey my whole life. So I know that there's people who, you know, for me, I've always just been a fan of music. And I wound up trying to be the guy that I worshipped. In other words, I always worshipped Robert Plant and Ozzy Osbourne and, you know, Paul Rogers and Bon Scott and even Michael Jackson when I was a little kid. And I chose to try to be what those people were, you know, but all the while never losing my sense, the wonder, the sense of wonder that I had when I was a listener of music. And then I became a maker of music. And so I can always relate to the fact that, you know, people come up to me, they're like, oh my God, you were in Terminator. And I saw you on Arsenio Hall. And I remember you on MTV. And I played this song at my wedding. And it blows my mind because, you know, I did something that touched other people in the way that guys like Bon Scott touched me. And I feel so honored that people choose to take my music and weave it into the fabric of their lives somehow. And it's, you know, and so they're there. I wish it was 20 more million people like that. And not becoming the guy that 20 million people listen to really screwed with me for quite a while. And now I'm still making music. My band that, you know, was supposed to be so successful and work with all these titans of the music business. And I'm, you know, still basically with the same core group of guys doing what I love to do with guys I love to do it with and for people that I love to do it for. And I'm really blessed about that. But until I realized that self-worth isn't necessarily a number on a sales sheet, you know, you could be there's a lot of really incredible talented musicians that for one reason or another never hit it out of the park, but they got to get to the plate and they got to put the jersey on and they got to be on the playing card, you know?
Yeah.
So I had all of that and I'm still doing it. And it's a lot of fun. And fortunately, I learned all the right lessons and didn't die before I did. So
It sounds like having a podcast. We're the same kind of deal. We ain't got to the big leagues. I just got your book. Like I said, we just got it here a couple days ago, and I've had some family issues. I haven't been able to delve into it like I want to. But the things that I have read, I've really enjoyed. And like I said, the stories that you told are fantastic. That's why I want to get in. I'm going to start from the beginning because I had to just kind of finger through it.
Yeah. You got some bullet points.
But, you know, talking to, you know, when you were talking about, you know, you were saying about, well, you know, the stories you told about Gene, you know, the stuff you were talking with Gary Corbett. Thing is, we met Gary through the Rockin' Pod for the first year. And then I think he came down the second year. We've had him on our show. You know, unfortunately, you know, he passed away, which yeah. He was a fantastic guy, but he backs you up on everything that you were talking about with Gene, as far as, you know, as far as his keyboards being, he's like, when they set off an explosion, I hit a key. made the explosion a lot better, you know, and stuff like that. And I love hearing stories like that. And like I said, just reading, that was the first story I read. And it's like going, I know the guy who said that.
Right, exactly.
Actually backed it up. I was going, his stories are going to be pretty good.
Yeah, no, there's some really fun ones. And, oh, man, yeah. God bless guy. I miss him because he's such a down-to-earth, talented, warm guy.
And sweetheart, yeah.
Total sweetheart, man, you know. And it's and it was such a – me and him got into a lot of trouble. We really,
can't believe that.
Stay close to my camera here. Me and him were drugging buddies for a while until we both got our act together. And we used to tuck our hair up into our hat and go into downtown Philadelphia to try to score some, you know, drugs. And we got pulled over by the cops because they knew exactly what we were doing. And they knew we had a bunch of long hair tucked in the hat. And we're down there in the hood. And there's only one reason for guys like us to go down in the hood like that. And right as they were about to go through the car and arrest us, a call came in of a shooting, and we got away from it. And we went running back to Brooklyn together for 2 hours, like, oh, my God. Oh, my God. You know, we were like, we're going to do that again. Never going to do that again. And, of course, we were doing it 2 weeks later. But, you know.
So, wait a minute. You couldn't score anything in New York? You had to go to Philly?
That's the thing. They busted, like, some big shipment. And Gary, you know, because he was working with Cinderella all the time, and they were, you know, at the time Tom was living in Philadelphia, and he used to go to Philly all the time, and so he knew some guys, and you know, he was like, well, I can't get a hold of the guy, but I know where all the dealers hang out in the hood, you know, and I'm like, okay, man, and we took his car, we drove in there, and just by the skin of our teeth, got away with it. And, you know, just crazy stuff like that. But, you know, Gary's such a talented behind-the-scenes guy. And, you know, he worked with Kiss for such a long time, did a bunch of tours with him. And, yeah, you know, those guys were doing pre-recorded stuff way before anybody. It was all show business. I mean, at the time, they weren't, like, doing the lead vocals or the lead guitars or any of that stuff. But they definitely were augmenting the big background vocals. And it's funny because there's a story that I didn't tell in the book where Gene, you know, when they do God of Thunder, and there's like, I am the God of Thunder, you know, and that's run through a thing called a harmonizer that lowers the voice. And back in the day, they had one at the sound engineer's board, and the sound engineer would turn it on and turn it off. Well, the sound engineer was busy chatting up some pretty girl, and it came to God of Thunder, and he forgot to turn it on. And so Gene goes up to the mic and says, I am the God of Thunder. You know, and it's like, was not the larger than life, godlike, you know.
He sounds like a Jewish businessman.
Exactly right. Sounded like Uncle Bethany was telling you, no, I'm the God of Thunder. You know, and so Gene fired him the next day. And then all of a sudden, that became another key on Gary's keyboard of a sample that he would hit. And, you know, Gene used to say, it's not about how good you play. It's about whether the pyro goes off on time. That's where the good show is. And that's like that's a saying that is so important to Gene in everything he does. It's about show business. It's about the show. Right. It's about the spectacle. You know, and we used to get into big arguments because we were this sort of down and dirty, down to earth, you know, bikery blues band, thinking that, man, you know, you guys and your big pyro and your big productions and your big volume and, you know, man, music's got to change, get back to the roots. And he'd be like, shut the fuck up.
he'd be like looking at my, you know, look at my checkbook and then look at your checkbook.
Exactly. He's like, people don't want to hear songs about your fucking job. They want to hear about pussy. Okay.
And anybody that's seen Gene or knows much about Gene or met Gene before knows that's an absolute fact. What you just said is exactly what he would have said. It's just,
I know.
I mean, and it's funny because he had me do an experiment that worked. And I was really kind of like, he's like, okay, tomorrow night when you go out to do this song and you always start your thing about how many of you people hate your job, how many people hate your boss. Instead, go out there and go, how many of you like to eat pussy? And so I went out and then, you know, so I went out and I was like, no, I'm not going to do it. I went out, how many of you hate your boss? Next night, how many of you like to eat pussy? I was like, okay, Gene, you made your point, you know. Like, they don't want to hear about their fucking job. That's what they pay good money to forget about, you know.
That's exactly right.
I was like, you know, well, okay, you make a good point.
You can say what you want about Gene, but Gene is he is a businessman first and musicians.
And I think second. I talk about that in the book. You know, he used to tell everybody, I've never taken a vacation in my life. There's not a day that I'm not doing business. And at the time he was always, you know, on the phone in the dressing room. And I used to go in there because every night they had a big whole turkey and a whole roast beef and a whole ham, and they couldn't eat any of it. So we used to go in there and he used to like call us in. We used to eat drumsticks and we used to have a feast on the food because he would never finish it and it would go to waste. But he was always on the phone. He'd hang up the phone and I'd be like, he's still doing, because I'm Liza Minnelli's business manager. And I was like, get out. He goes, no, I'm Liza Minnelli's business manager. And at the time he was.
Yeah.
He's so good at business and he's so good at marketing and merchandising and show business. And the man is by far the most in tune to the business and commerce side of the business, as well as the spectacle and the songs and everything else. And he loves it as much as he loves making the music. He loves making all the wheels turn and the gears line up, and he does it with such a passion. And, you know, but then the next minute he's talking about, like we'd be in the dressing room and there was Shannon and the kids and Gene's got his book of Polaroids sitting on the table of all the Polaroids of him going down on girls and girls going down on him. And I, like, ask Shannon, that's his book of Polaroids. Doesn't that freak you out? And she's like, oh, that's like when Gene was doing the silly sex stuff all the time, whatever, rock star shit. She didn't even care about it. You know, it's like, yeah, that's what he used to do. He used to eat a lot of pussy and get a lot of blowjobs. That's what rock stars do. And I was like, she goes, but he's here now with the kids and the stuffed animals. He doesn't have any like 20-year-old girls in here right now. I'm like, you're right. I said, but she goes, that's his past. I don't care about it. And I was like, man, that's so cool. I got to find me a wife like that. And sure enough, I did. You know? But again, he just has this balance going on of, you know, what is rock star? What is show business? What is spectacle? And what is commerce, man? I mean, the guy is just, he's a legend. Yeah. And he's a larger-than-life personality, and he can be very off-putting and very blunt. And if he doesn't like you, you're going to know it, you know. But he was incredibly helpful to us and generous of his time and his input. We fought and argued with him a lot of times about it because we believed music was going to change. And sure enough, that's months later, the whole grunge thing started and it pushed all of those spectacle bands out. And there was a bunch of guys in brown sweaters looking at their shoes. And Gene's head used to explode, going, I can't believe that the number one band is this Nirvana thing with the guy with holes in his sweater and he's not even looking at the crowd when he plays. And he couldn't comprehend it for quite a while. And, you know, but he gets it. He gets what the deal is and he does what he has to do. And lo and behold, he's still out there touring, you know, so God bless him.
So it's the end of the road version 37.
Right, exactly. It's good. This is the last tour. You better buy your tickets number 17. Yeah.
Well, I think that the name is eventually going to change from the end of the road tour to the road never ends tour. Yeah.
Right. I know. Now, knowing Gene, he is going to hire body doubles that are younger and he's going to keep the brand alive, making everyone think he's 97 and still the God of Thunder on that stage. It's like, what is it? The Dread Pirate Roberts, you know? things like where one retires and another one picks up. It wouldn't shock me if Gene did that, you know? I mean, well, I think David Coverdale is actually doing that. He brings somebody out on stage to sing Whitesnake songs and to sing the lead, which I can't believe people put up with, but they do, you know? They just, I don't know. I guess they just want to see the band so bad.
Or you could listen to John Bon Jovi come out and sing his own shit and sound like crap.
I've seen YouTube videos of that, and at first I thought, oh man, this is not fair to John. John's a super nice guy, and he was actually helpful to me and very generous of his time and kind. But I saw this YouTube video, and I'm like, oh man, you know, people filmed him when he had a bad cold, and he wanted to go out and do the show anyway. And then I saw like five of those, and I was like, oh, I guess he just doesn't have a voice anymore, and he's still going out there, you know, either
people still paying, you know,
holding the mic out to the crowd to sing the parts, and I don't know. I kind of have a lot of mixed feelings about that approach. Well, but
you know, and the thing is, though, as long as people keep filling those stadiums, he's gonna keep doing it.
Well, that's it. And, you know, I was talking to some other folks about this, and it's like, you know, this music gets woven into the fabric of people's lives, and it's so important to them. And there's so many memories and friendships and marriages and times of people's lives, and it's so important to them. And they're so kind in their love for these bands that they're willing to overlook all that. And as a performer, that's, you know, I'm lucky to still have my voice and I can still pull it all off. And these other guys, man, they're out there struggling, but they're doing it. And the fans just show them so much love and support. I don't know if I could do it, you know, but they're doing it and the fans don't seem to mind. And I think it's another reason to love fans of rock and roll so much, that they're so forgiving and understanding, you know?
Yeah. I have to say, my wife and I went and saw Bon Jovi, I think back in 2018. And that is the only time that I went to a concert that I was really excited to go to and was extremely disappointed, because I never got to see Bon Jovi in the heyday.
Right.
No.
So, yeah, you want to see them in their prime. And you want to, you know. And listen, I understand it. You know, it's like, it's, you know, fans of music, especially after COVID and with inflation and all this stuff, it is so hard to be able to go out there and make the ends meet and generate enough revenue to keep the circus rolling, because there's a lot of expense, and the expense you have to commit to it 6 months to a year before. And with things like COVID going around, and you're really rolling the dice, and there's a lot of people's livelihoods on the line with it. And I get it. These guys love doing it so much, even if they can't do it to the degree of, you know, strength that they used to do it. They either need to do it financially, or they just love to do it so much. And when they go out there, and if the vast majority of the crowd is cheering them on, even if they can't sing the choruses anymore, they're going to just keep doing it till like people stop buying tickets, and they're not. So, you know, it is what it is.
Well, I went to see him last year when he did that little short tour, and I went only because I had free tickets. That's the only reason why I went, because I watched videos, and man, it was really hard. It was tough. I mean, looks like he was having a good time, but I did kind of feel bad for him. I mean, and I did get to see him back in the day, so I saw him. I saw him right when Slippery When Wet came out. And right,
so you have those memories of him being a stallion, you know.
You know, not headlining. He wasn't headlining yet. Actually, it was the last show that he opened. You know, just, you know, it's not the same. But, you know, honestly, you have to understand that these guys are not 18, 22, 25, 27 anymore. And they're not going to they're not going to sound the way they did. You know, it just physically is not possible. And you know, but some of those guys have carried on pretty well and done a pretty decent job. And other ones are trying to figure out how to mask it in 35 different ways. And it's like, you know, if you're going to do it, just let it go, you know?
I agree. And it's you know, for me, being self-evaluating all the time as to, well, you know, I mean, I'll be honest, there's a couple of songs in our repertoire that I don't sing anymore because I just, it was always way up in the top of my range. It was hard for me when I was 30. Now that I'm 60, you know, it's like, it's just, okay, so that one comes out of the set. I'm glad there's only one or two of those out of like 60 songs, you know? So I feel grateful about that. But I got to say, I went and saw Paul Rodgers a few years ago.
Dude,
God damn, that son of a bitch sounds better than he ever has. And I'm like, fuck you.
he has not changed a bit.
No, and I'm sitting out there going, fuck this guy. I love this guy, but this guy. It's like he's making it look so easy and effortless. And he's still, you know, listen, he was never a guy to run around on the stage. He just sings there and he just delivers the hell out of a song. And, you know, he's one of my favorite singers of all time. And to see him and have him blow me away, it gave me even more respect. I got to meet him once. We did this big benefit for, it was put on by this radio station for like, I don't know, a children's hospital or something. And so I from Little Caesar flew out and we did this jam thing. And I was with like some guys from Skid Row and Aldo Nova. Anyway, Paul Rodgers was on the bill. So they put us all up in this one nice hotel and I'm down. I just finished checking in. I'm in the lobby and Paul Rodgers walks in and he starts coming to the front desk and I stuck my hand out. And it's the only time in my life that I was a complete blithering idiot when I try to speak. 15 things try to come out of my mouth at once because how much I love him and it's so great to meet him. And I was just like, and he just like put his hand on my shoulder and like, okay, like, I understand. And he turned around and walked away and I was like, oh, and he just like turned back and winked at me and that was all I got to say to him. I just stood there like not saying a fucking thing because I was such a fanboy that I
you're like that guy on like on
went to shit. My mouth and mind went to shit. And you know, it's one of those things that you say, if I ever met this guy, I'd love to ask him about this and talk to him about that. We're gonna become good friends and he'll call me on the phone and nope. Never gonna happen, not with that moronic exchange that I just had with him, you know.
No, I think everybody's had that moment. You know, it's like say when you've got it all planned out, what like you said, what you're gonna say, yeah. And you're sitting there going, lamp, table,
exactly. I know. And it's like and I felt like, you know, like when you're a 13-year-old boy and you finally got the nerve to go up to the girl and ask her out to the dance and you accidentally farted and you put four words together and she never spoke to you again and you regret it for the rest of your life. You know, you lay in bed with your after having a fight with your wife and you go, if I didn't just fuck up when I walked up to cute Cindy, we'd be married in this bed right now. You know, that's how the mind works, you know. So
that's hilarious.
I was a complete blithering idiot when I got to meet a guy who is still out there kicking some fucking ass.
That's
great. And so there's still people out there that, you know, your money is well spent. And, you know, because of social media and YouTube, you get to see it.
Right.
But people are still going to see Dokken and Vince Neil and Jon Bon Jovi, even though all three of those guys are really struggling. David Coverdale struggling. But you know
what? Stanley's struggling.
yeah, totally. And some of these guys are using recorded vocals and they're faking it. And, you know, the thing is, it's funny because like a band like Kiss, I think people don't really care because so much of it is, I mean, you didn't believe they were from outer space in their costumes, right? So it's okay if you don't believe it's really him singing either. You know? So it's like, there's so much actually, going on in a show like that, that's a lot different, you know, it's a lot different of a level because they've been doing so much stage sort of spectacle anyway that it's just one more, you know, just one more.
And in the way you put it too, I mean, it sounds right. You know, you're not going to a concert. You're going to a show.
Right.
A show is a show. So whatever it takes for this show to be successful, like when you go to a Broadway show, they got all kinds of tricks and all kinds of things going on. Real quick, Ron, I want to ask you something real quick. get back to you, because we've been talking about everybody else but you.
Yeah, yeah, I always do that.
So do we. We get off the rails a lot.
Yeah, off the rails.
Your time with Four Horsemen, how long did you spend with them?
Well, I did a tour with them. What happened, Frank was in a motorcycle accident in L.A., and he was really, really in bad shape. He's in the hospital, in a coma. They couldn't tell any of his friends, family, or band members just what his situation was. They had just finished off a record. Frank had just finished his vocals when he got into the accident, so the record got mixed, and his record label felt like they had to put it out because they couldn't, you know, they had a lot of money invested in this and they wanted to put it out. And the band was like, well, what do we do? Because Frank's in the hospital. And I knew Dave Lismy. And Dave said, would you consider going out and touring with us up in Canada? And, you know, we're going to make it clear to the fans that you're not replacing Frank because he's in the hospital and that's really tacky. And we're hoping that it works out, obviously, but we have this record we need to support and we're kind of starving here. So I was like, yeah. So I learned, you know, all the material and went out.
So was this, nobody said it was easy. This was that album.
Correct. Yes. Okay. Correct.
Yeah.
And so, you know, Frank's very unique vocal style. So I didn't try to imitate him. I just try to pay tribute to him. And, you know, it's also in my wheelhouse, that kind of music. So I love the band. So it was so much fun to do. And the fans, again, the fans are just so great about it. Because, you know, we would talk about Frank and what the situation was. We didn't try to make like it wasn't happening. But again, the strange thing about fans is, especially Four Horsemen fans, they love to suck back the beers and the shots. And I can't tell you how every night people came up putting their arms around me going, Frank, I love you, Frank. And I'm like, dude, I'm not Frank. I'm just filling in for Frank. And they kept calling me Frank. And I was just like, I'd sign their autographs, Frank. So, you know, why ruin it for them? Why pull them out of their drunken glory and fun to tell them a sad story? And then when I came back shortly thereafter, Frank finally passed away. And we talked about me, you know, because Caesar was kaput at this point. And we talked about me, you know, coming in and being the new singer in the Four Horsemen. And unfortunately, Dave was then located in Maryland and a couple of the guys were based in Canada. But that's where I got to meet Pharaoh, who played on the second album and wound up being the bass player in Little Caesar. And that's where I met him.
Oh, cool.
So well,
that album came out and I remember that. I mean, me and my buddy, it was one of those ones where it was like, oh, my God, this actually sounds pretty. Because it was a good roots based.
Yeah.
Rock and roll.
Southern
really
rock,
good album.
AC/DC.
And if anybody's never heard that album, you need to listen to it.
It's a great
album. Is there any video or anything of you singing with them?
There was a couple of very short clips. You know, it was too bad.
I'd like to find him. I haven't had time to look for it, but
yeah. Me too. There's a couple of clips where I'm singing just the last half of a chorus and then it's the guitar solo for Dave and he sounds great. A couple of very short snippets. And then I heard that there was a recording of it from the Toronto show. And the Toronto show was a bit of we did it. There was like a 1,500 people or something that was sold out. It was packed. The crowd was going off. And somebody whipped a beer bottle at Dave. And Dave dropped his guitar and dove into the audience and started going at it with the guy that threw it. And you can hear all of this on the recording. And I couldn't get a copy of it. It was like somewhere on the internet that I could listen to. And I couldn't download it. One of those kind of files that you're not allowed to download it. And I couldn't ever find it again. It was up on like some peer-to-peer like Napster type streaming thing, you know?
Sure.
Somebody pulled it off their computer. And if you're not online, you can't see it in the file base. And I've never been able to find it again, but it sounded great. And you can hear everybody talking in the mic. We're going to fuck you up, motherfucker. And you hear like mic stands dropping and you hear the crowd going nuts. Right. And then like, there's like some mumbling and it, And then we get back on stage and Dave's like, yeah, next motherfucker that does that's going to get the same ass whipping and that kind of stuff. We went back into rock and rolling. It was really a lot of fun.
That's great.
Yeah, it was a great experience.
I like that album a lot, and I like your voice a lot, and I wish there was a way that I could hear, you know, that's why I was asking you about that, because I would love to hear you doing those songs.
A couple of demos that we released, actually, we put them out on Facebook, and they somewhere on my page, I don't know. Send me your email, and I have it on my computer.
Okay.
There's a song called Sunflower Girl, and... It was a song that Pharaoh wrote, and Dave did it on his little studio in his house.
Cool.
In his apartment. And they're really good songs. I wish we would have got to record them proper in a studio.
Yeah, that would have been a good.
But the demos are even really good. So cool. Get me your email, just I'll dig them out, and I'll send them to you. If you
okay. That'd be great.
You can hear my voice with Dave's guitar. And so on.
Now, that band was really fantastic. And like I said, I like everything that you've done. All the bands you've been in have been fantastic. And, you know, it's just you – I wish you could have hit it, you know. I'm saying, got to the point where you had Gene's checkbook. You know what I'm saying?
Right. It's funny because one of the things I point out in the book, like I was going to be the new singer in the Chili Peppers. I mean, it got to the point that you'll get to that point in the book, and they threw Anthony out because he was having such a hard time with drugs, and they couldn't take it anymore, and they. Audition a million guys, and I went down there, and Flea really liked it, and I wrote the whole Uplift Mofo Party Plan record with them with different lyrics and melodies, not like his rapping style, and they really liked it, and the producer Michael Beinhardt said, okay, well, let's get in and start demoing these things, and we did, and I had a cassette of it, some rough mixes. And then Flea called me and said, listen, man, Anthony's out of rehab and he's got his shit together, and I've been friends with him since grade school, and I'm giving him another chance, and the band wants it. And I was like, I get it. I totally understand, man, you know? So that was another real close brush with greatness. Wow. And then I was supposed to be the singer in Snake Pit with Slash, worked with them for a while. And then that didn't work out because I couldn't sing Guns N' Roses songs. I can't sing like Axl. And Slash wanted a guy because he knew every night people would be yelling out Sweet Child of Mine and Paradise City, and I'm like, dude, I can't really do those songs justice. So he went with the singer that was closer to Axl's singing style for the first Snake Pit record. So that didn't happen. And then I did that super group with Adrian Vandenberg, Rudy Sarzo, and Tommy Aldridge called Manic Eden. That came out for 5 seconds, and then the band disbanded. So really close. several times.
Yeah. It's like... Okay, there. Now we got you.
Yeah, exactly. You know, this is going to be the one. This is going to be the one, you know. Yeah, but we've all had that with relationships and everything else. And it doesn't quite work out the way you hope it will. But you give it your best shot. That's all you can do.
I like your attitude, though. I mean, you've got a great attitude. That's the one thing. A lot of people, this poor me. You know what?
Oh God, yeah.
You got to enjoy. You got to see a lot of things that a lot of people didn't get to see or do, and even the chances of doing this. I mean, I never got that opportunity. You know
exactly. See, that's what I was saying earlier. It's like this out of body experience where I go, I was sitting in a room with Slash writing songs.
Wow,
that is like people's fantasy, you know, and so. Yeah, I didn't get to get on stage with him and do this thing for years like Miles Kennedy gets to do right now, but I got to do it. And that is a priceless thing for me. It's priceless to sit in a room for a month with the Chili Peppers and get to play. And like one of the things that Flea said to me when I first came down, before we played the first note, he's like, dude, every guy in this band plays every note like it might be the last note they ever get to play. And if you're not going to approach it that way, then tell me now and I'll find somebody else. And I had such a respect for that, that that's his attitude about his music. And I was all in on that. And so to get to play with a guy like that, that's as respected as he is, with a band that's as great as that was, even if nobody got to hear it, you know, I mean, again, that's a fantasy for a lot of people. So, you know, and then quite honestly, knowing my predispositions and where I wound up going, because when this all didn't come together, it tells about in the book that I wound up becoming a heroin addict, you know? And I spent, I think it was 5 or close to 7 years. When you're doing heroin every day, you don't remember if you've been loaded for 5 or 7 years. That's kind of how that happens. But, you know, you get to that point where you realize that, hey, man, if I were to become as big as Axl Rose, if I had that opportunity, I'd be an asshole or dead. You know, that's the way my personality was.
Right.
That I wouldn't have handled it well. I probably would have not handled it well. So to be able to sit here today and tell all the stories about that and get to talk about the people that I've gotten to interact with, from being in one scene of Terminator, getting a hit on Schwarzenegger, having a pool cue, and getting to hang out with Flea and make music. I mean, it's a life really well lived. And even though I'm not on posters all over people's walls and I don't go out in public and people are coming up to me for my autograph because they have no fucking idea who I am, it doesn't change the level of gratitude that I have for what I have got to experience and what I've gotten to do. And I'm still lucky enough to do it. Even though it's only in clubs and small theaters, it's not in arenas, I still get to do what I love to do. And I do it with integrity, with a bunch of guys that have integrity. And the people that I get to meet and the stories they get to tell me and the honor that it is to get to go out and entertain them. And, you know, like I say, to be woven into the fabric of their lives, to know that music that I made was played at a wedding or someone's funeral or something like that, man, is priceless to me. So that's just the way it is.
So Ron, we've spent close to an hour here chatting about all this stuff, which has been great, the stories, but where can people read and get the book? Where can they get the book from?
You can find it on Amazon. I know that they've just, for some reason, it got labeled as adult content. And so for the last 2 weeks, if you did a search on my name or the book title, Ron Young, judge this book by its cover is what it's called.
Your middle name is not Jeremy, is it?
No. But, you know, the funny thing is there's somebody else that has a book called Judge This Book by Its Cover, and it was written by a preacher. And so mine is a little bit different than his, I'm going to bet. Yes, exactly. But from what I understand from Steve, who I, you know, such a great guy that I got to work on this project with, and he's the one that's been chatting with Amazon, and they took that filter off. And so now it's way more searchable. And I know a lot of people have been finding it. It shows up, it's beautifully made, and it shows up in 3 days on your door, and it's reasonably priced, kids. Good stocking stuffer for Christmas. Give it to grandma so she can have that heart attack you've been trying to give her.
Well, the thing is, like I said, I have a short copy of it. I have a copy of it, but it's I'm not going to read it. I will be buying it, and I'll be sitting on my couch reading it, because I really want to read all the way through it.
Well, thanks. Yeah, there's a lot of fun stuff.
And I want the hard copy.
I have diarrhea of the mouth. That's why I needed Steve. This would have been an 18,000-page book if I was the guy editing all this shit, because I just go and I go and I go.
It's like shipping on the books for then $90, because it's like
thick, right? Exactly. it's like the manual of how to understand women. It's this.
What about social media, Facebook, that kind of stuff?
Yes. Well, you can find me on social media, but unfortunately, I'm at the 5,000 friends limit. But still, I have a lot of, I tend to piss a lot of people off with my humor and my sort of poking fun at reality. So I'm always losing friends. So still send me a friend request. But you can follow Little Caesar, my band, and Crusados, my other band, on Facebook. Just do a search on Little Caesar or Crusados. That's another great project that I'm blessed to get to do with some great guys, some of them from Little Caesar, actually. So so that's where you can find on social media, send a message. My Facebook page is public, so you can still yell at me, send me a message, or post on my wall if you want. So I love So if I've written a story that you're pissed you off, you can write back and tell me so. I'm ready for it. You know.
Cool. Well, thanks, man. That's great. Appreciate
Thank
it.
Thank you so much.
Thank you all. I really appreciate it. It was nice to meet you. And I appreciate what you do and what you talk about and how you talk about it. So thank you.
Well, hang tight as I take us out of here. Cool. Y'all visit agesofrock.com. Check out our social media links and past episodes. And until next time, peace out. Thanks for listening to the Ages of Rock podcast. If you haven't done so already, be sure to subscribe to our YouTube channel, like us on Facebook, and most importantly, tell all your friends. Remember, you're never too old to rock. Until the next episode, peace out, folks.